All right.
A little shredded. It's all good.
I think so. Okay, everyone.
Good afternoon, and welcome to, I guess, the third in the series on SharePoint development. Our session today is nothing less than discover the future of SharePoint development. So I'm here with Luca Bandinelli, and between the two of us, we actually have 25 years of experience working on SharePoint. We've seen through a lot of interesting times. We've worked to help all of y'all build great solutions on top of SharePoint. Luca, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, thank you, Mike. So yeah, I've been around SharePoint since Tahoe time, so 2000. I was in the field helping customers and partners adopting and using SharePoint in their enterprises, and then I moved in Redmond in 2008 when I joined the product group, and right now I'm part of the Dan Kogan team under Adam Armitz that basically is part of the SharePoint framework that you guys saw in the previous sessions right now. Mike?
Yeah, so and I've worked a little bit on developing the APIs and the features framework and those kinds of technologies in the 2006, 2007 and beyond timeframe. And so this background will help us, hopefully help you, frame some of these new future investments and gives a good background on how these are all, supported moving forward and put them into the context of the future investments. But we're going to focus a lot today on what's new and what's coming. Of course, you've heard a lot about SharePoint framework undoubtedly, but we have a number of other technologies that are also coming to help complement the SharePoint framework to allow you to build better applications. And we'll talk about the relation of all these different technologies put together so that you can build better solutions. So as a takeaway, what you'll come away with is what's new coming down the road. Now, when I say future of SharePoint development, I'm not talking about SharePoint 2050. I'm talking about the remainder of the year and moving into 2017, that kind of a future. We'll talk a lot about the different technologies. What should I use when? Where should I use SharePoint add-ins? Where should I use SharePoint framework? How do I think about the different types of ways that I can access SharePoint data via the SharePoint APIs? We'll talk through those different types of trade-offs and where things stand out and where they're unique. We'll talk about the best practices and how you should go about using them when you're actually building an application. And we will also call out a number of places where we've got a lot of ideas about how to build upon some of the things that we're doing. And of course, these, what's coming next, they're never definitive. They're never, we're never going to say, okay, it's going to come on Friday at 3 o'clock. We have lots of things that we're working on. We're balancing a lot of feedback. So we'll talk in a little bit more broad terms, and it's not really intended to be kind of a guarantee of this functionality is coming out when, but we did want to actually try to share a lot of what we're thinking about what's coming next. And so, nothing less than how should I think about SharePoint development would be one key takeaway coming from this presentation. So let's get started. Now, we'd be remiss if we didn't say that we think that SharePoint, especially with a lot of the investments in modern user experiences, is getting really good as a SharePoint app. So let me show you a little bit of what that looks like. So a lot of you have probably already seen this in various forms, that you can do a lot of great things with SharePoint, with a lot of modern user experiences. So here I have a health clinic dashboard where we're managing all of our health clinic document data, and we're collaborating on, for example, outpatient practices that we want to share with patients, and working with the various doctors. And so the new SharePoint experience and how SharePoint is really great as an out-of-the-box application starts with a refresh site contents page where we'll show you more contextual information about the documents that are actually being worked on in your site in line, making it easier for users to go get to their documents. We are improving things like the list experience. So the list experience is something where it's actually where what we've done is made the experience a lot more inline, simplified it a good bit, which actually goes a long way towards making it more usable. And we've also added some various commands like, for example, flow to create very simple workflows that you can start on top of the data inside of your SharePoint list, coupled with the ability to do things like add columns right in line, for example. I can add a priority field, all in line. And so if you compare this to some of the user experience, in SharePoint, there's a lot of power that was exposed there. And what we're really doing here is giving a focused, inline, quick edit look at, data inside of SharePoint lists. And another new improvement is the new page model, which, again, I'm sure a lot of you have seen. The idea is to really streamline and make the process of adding a page to your SharePoint site quicker. More in line. It feels almost like you're using PowerPoint in some ways. Like I can just add some web parts to my page. I don't think about things like page refreshes and all that, the things that get in the way of having a smooth editing experience. So in this case, I can say, maybe I want to create a page for important documents. I can quickly add a site activity part. And this is Some of these are our out-of-the-box parts that we're featuring as part of SharePoint, but of course, over time, our out-of-the-box set will grow. So there's going to be an increasing number of different components you can put together and assemble to create essentially applications and tailored sites. So I can add some recent activities here. I can add a view and point at a document. We've made a lot of simple user experience changes. So for example, we're showing you a list of recently accessed documents. So this is a much better file picker experience to make it easier to get started. And so all these little touches, the simplification, the out-of-the-box set of parts that we're exposing, we think really mean that in a lot of cases, before you go out and start coding an application, it might make sense to just see what's available inside of SharePoint, see what's available with Flow and with Power Apps, and if you haven't seen some of those sessions, definitely catch them later in the week, and actually build some great applications. But, of course, a lot of you do some really powerful things with SharePoint for a lot of different reasons. So, first, a lot of times people want to extend the site experience of SharePoint. SharePoint is really the hub of a team. It's the face in some regards. It's how people look at the data and the content and the activity of teams and divisions and companies even. And so having a very tailored look is very important. And so we see a lot of developers building very tailored experiences on top of this. And so this is Beezy, very tailored, of course, integrates social components back into SharePoint and works with things like SharePoint files. Of course, there's also lots of integrations on top of SharePoint. So SharePoint is home to thousands and thousands of documents for a particular company. And so it can be very important to streamline the process of how people maybe send it to an external vendor or do a document signing process. And so with things like the add-in store that we have, we have, for example, DocuSign, where you download it, you install the application, and then you get a handy and convenient menu on top of your document library to go take your documents and go send them outwards. And of course, a lot of you are also undoubtedly building these kinds of integrations into your own custom business processes as well. We have seen customers build full applications on top of SharePoint. So in this case, we have a CRM application that's built using SharePoint technologies. It works great for small businesses and makes it easy for them to go get started. Of course, there's a larger CRM for which you might want to integrate that as well, but seeing people build applications on top of SharePoint is definitely something we're seeing as well. And then finally, you have processes and workflows. We see developers creating applications and you all out there, again, taking all those valuable documents inside of a SharePoint site and adding some processes that work the way your teams work in terms of approvals and making sure it goes around and it gets supported. So these are the kinds of things that, as we think about SharePoint as a platform and how we want to extend it, we want to make sure that we well support all of these. And we have a set of principles behind how we think about it as well. And I think you've maybe seen some of the slides in some of the other presentations, but it is pretty important. So to start with, we want to make sure that the things that we build for everyone out there, for all of you, it also get used by our internal teams to build out their own applications. Of course, that helps with testing and it helps with robustness. It also helps with feedback and making sure that by the time an API might get to you or an extensibility point, it's been battle tested. It's already part of the SharePoint infrastructure. It's being used in some form of an application. Things like the command bars and the lists and all the various user experience components, we use them and they're actually available to you, and we'll talk a little bit about that. We want to build more things that are built on the client side. We think that provides a much more fluid and integrated experience. So when I was editing those parts on those pages, we didn't see a lot of postbacks. And that's done through the power of a lot more logic that's placed into the client in JavaScript in the browser. And so making that creation of those kinds of applications more feasible, easier, is a direction we want to go. And of course, you've probably also heard a lot about Microsoft Graph, and we'll talk a little bit more about that today as well. Microsoft Graph is this burgeoning set of APIs that are consistent, that are available for a lot of different products like Exchange and for tasks and those kinds of types of business data. And SharePoint, we want to make sure it's easy for SharePoint data to play in that graph and to incorporate graph-based data into SharePoint and expose it to web pages and devices and those kinds of things. Okay, so when you build out an application, even if you're not building it on SharePoint, we think it sort of breaks down into four buckets of things that you want to think about and go build on top of to build your application. There's a user experience, what the user sees, maybe you have some analytics, maybe it's a weather web part on your homepage and it's all about having a really great view of the weather. The user experience, of course, is critical to many applications. If users don't use it, that whole application may not matter. And so user experience is fairly important. Of course, a lot of applications work with data, and SharePoint hosts a lot of document-based data, so therefore, that's a very key thing that you want to work with in SharePoint is, how do I get at the documents, how do I get at the list items, how do I get at the site structure, and all those bits of, you know, essentially organization data. You do that through APIs, and we want to make that easy as well. Now, SharePoint also has a lot of infrastructure for processes. How do I, you know, work through what happens when a document gets uploaded? How do I route it? How do I modify the metadata in flight? And then finally, and sometimes this is maybe, sort of the last thing you have to do, so sometimes it doesn't maybe get as much focus. I know certainly that's the case in my apps that I build. How are you going to package and deploy it and manage the life cycle of your applications? You know, is very important as well. And so these are kind of the four very broad generic buckets for how we'll think about, you know, SharePoint as a platform and how you really think about building any application. So to start with user experience, we have a number of new technologies across the board to extend these various bits of infrastructure. On the user experience side, of course, you've probably heard about the SharePoint framework. This is our new client-side solution we'll talk a lot more about to make it easier to build client-side web parts. We're also having Power Apps. So Power Apps lets end users and business unit IT and other folks create solutions that work great on mobile using data inside of SharePoint, using data in other locations. For data and APIs, we have Graph, and we'll talk a lot more about that. As I mentioned, it's our unified API for getting data in and out of SharePoint. For processes, we have Webhooks. Webhooks is something we recently released in developer preview. It's a simple, quick way to get notifications as list items in SharePoint change. And then Microsoft Flow, which, again, allows you to very quickly ascribe actions to behaviors that happen inside of lists. End users can go customize them, and there's a burgeoning set of, you know, things you can integrate into the flow to make really complicated and sophisticated types of flows. And then finally, when you package, you know, you don't really see this as a detail so much, but we have a tooling for packaging your SharePoint framework client-side web parts into solutions and pushing them into SharePoint and managing the lifecycle of those. Of course, we have a number of existing technologies as well that actually complement a lot of these newer technologies, and we'll talk about how that happens. So many of you are probably building things with add-ins, formerly known as apps, things like parts and custom actions to integrate with the out-of-the-box SharePoint user experience. For data and APIs, a lot of you probably are working with the client-side object model, whether it's the REST flavor, if you will, or the JavaScript object models or the .NET object models. And then we also have REST endpoints for those as well. On flows, we have workflows, both 2010-style workflows and 2013-style workflows, and event receivers, if you want a little bit more of a lower-level look at processes. And then for package and deployment, we have both add-ins that can go through the store or get sideloaded into your site or declarative solutions. And of course, if you're developing on-premises, there's a number of technologies there as well that are essentially limited to on-premises by virtue of, you know, they require DLLs and .NET to be coded and deployed. A lot of the user experience in SharePoint 2007 as a case in point was implemented with ASP.NET 3.0 and then 4.0. And so it uses this post-bat type of, you know, methodology for working with it. We had a full .NET object model, the SP site, SP web that we all know and love, right? And then event receivers, so code-based callouts. And then finally, full trust solutions was the way to really package all these together and push them out as a platform. So this is kind of a little bit of the landscape. And we think that these technologies really can complement each other. And what we want to try to do is sort of tease out and explore the relationships between them. So let's talk a little bit more in detail about the user experience. So the goal for the user experience with all of our modern work fell down into three different buckets. First, we wanted to make it fast and reactive. So as I mentioned earlier, like how does PowerPoint work? You don't wait for the screen to really refresh, hopefully, when you add new shapes to your PowerPoint slide or when you change the properties. It just happens in line. It just works as fast as you do. We want to make sure that SharePoint has that reactive experience as well when you're designing pages or editing a list. Simple yet powerful. So that sounds kind of a little bit like, marketing speak, I guess. But the idea is that we had a lot of ways to really customize things when you're actually editing your SharePoint site. If you look at the old web part infrastructure, there's a lot of different dials and things you could do, and it actually allowed you to customize in a very fine detail, but it also could be very overwhelming for users to think about, well, what does the Chrome state of a part, what should that be? Should that be minimized or should that be normal? And so there is some benefit in actually streamlining the user experience. We will add a lot of power to, you know, over time and add more options, of course, to our user experience, but the idea is to take a really hard look at a lot of the complexity of the user experience, expose more powerful advanced options in a very thoughtful way, But net-net, one of the ideas behind a lot of the work that we're doing in our user experience is to start by simplifying and then exposing more powerful sort of concepts later on and through, you know, again, thoughtful mechanisms. And then finally, works great on mobile. Of course, you know, so many people are accessing everything through their mobile devices and probably almost everything through it. So we want to make sure that everything that we do can work well with mobile devices. So when you're using the SharePoint app, the SharePoint framework parts that will come down, they can render responsively and accommodate the different types of, you know, screen sizes and form factors so that they look just great on mobile devices as well. And that was some of the goals behind the user experience. So with that, we sort of work towards the SharePoint framework to help support some of those goals, and Luca will go and talk through them.
Perfect. Thank you, Mike. So a couple of things that have been said around SharePoint framework already, and the SharePoint framework, basically, it's something that we have shipped very recently and is available for on our third party as well as first party. So if I switch back to my Dell machine, couple of things to see. So now you can see this is the new page experience, which, by the way, is available as first release. So if you are a first release customer, you are able to have the new page experience. And if you are a developer tenant on top of the first release, you can have client-side web parts, custom client-side web parts available on modern pages as well. So I'm here on the modern pages. I just created this a couple of seconds ago. I put that in edit mode. And the toolbox shows up, and when a toolbox shows up, it's basically able to pick some of the web parts. And the sessions before, and even Mike a second ago showed some of the out-of-the-box web parts over here. But let's take a look at some of the web parts that our third-party partner created, right? So for example, we have one from the Panda Pool. So this is basically a very nice web parts that is able to use some kind of information and functionalities that the client-side framework and the SharePoint framework provides in order to create rich and powerful functionalities. So I can create a new pool, which is basically what is your best speaker of the day. And I can start adding a couple of people, just like Mike. Yeah. And then I can add myself, I can add Dan, I can add Bill. And basically, I can have a kind of a close-up of the pool, which means that you can only vote up to certain times when you save. You can then publish the page. And when you are out from the authoring experience, you can go and vote and submit the information every time. OK, I'll choose you because I like you. Every time you click Submit, basically the way it works is that it automatically creates a graph behind the scenes. It provisions a list. So there is a tight integration between creating a web part and using the provisioning engine that we have as part of the client-side framework, the SharePoint framework, in order to create containers that you can use with your web part to store information in the site. This is a very nice web part. It's super cool. It's one of the best web parts that the early adopters created for during our hackathon days. We have another web part here, so you go back to the edit mode. Let's say that now I want to add another web part. Let's say that I want to add the document dashboard web part. This is another super cool web part. The way that this web part works basically takes a look at all the information that you have in your tenancy on yourself through Graph APIs, through Office Graph, so Delve, and basically try to understand all the documents that you have. A couple of cool things that this web part has. Basically, if you take a look at the property panel, through the SharePoint framework, now when you create your web part, you are able to have a couple of things. First is that as we were saying before, the property pane is reactive. So basically, you can change some of the information, just like, say, I want only my documents. And as you can see, the web part itself changed immediately without having to do any other changes. The other thing is the SharePoint framework gives you the ability to create a wizard-like property pane. So here you can have pages, and you can have multiple kind of functionalities that show up. And of course, all of the pages are reactive at the same time, right? So if I change something right now, it absolutely and immediately changes without having to go and click save or store that information somewhere else. And during the time, we said several times during these days and this presentation that the SharePoint framework works both on modern page, just like here, but also in classic. So if I go back to this site, and I go one of the classic pages that I have, just like my home page of the team site, the page that all we know and love here, I can put this page in edit mode. And what I can do, I can go and insert and go to web parts. At the moment I go here on custom, I can see that these web parts are here available. And from the development standpoint, the developers didn't have to do anything special or anything specific to be sure that they are showing up both in classing and in modern. You develop your web part, you create your functionalities, and basically once you've packaged and the package has been deployed at the site collection, the web part is available through the gallery, web part gallery in classic, or through the new modern toolbox in modern. And that really works. So if I go here and select the document dashboard, for example, and click add, and of course I'm doing a post back because now I'm classic, so I'm back to the classic SharePoint ways. So the web part now is rendering, and here it is. And if I take a look at the property pane, I click on the edit web part, the server side property pane comes in, so post back, but now I click configure, and voila, the same property pane with the same wizarding is over here and works automatically in both classic and modern with no any changes. So this is a great kind of a thing that we have for both classic and modern. So if I go back to the presentation, thank you, Mike. So those are the web part that we created and the other, our third-party partners created. As Dan was mentioning before in his previous session, we had, since we started this journey kind of almost a year ago, we had a lot of early feedbacks and engagement from ISVs and partners. And those guys and all of you guys helped us tremendously in providing great feedbacks and functionalities to help us reaching the point where we are in less than 1 year. So at this point, Dan presented before, and now we have the document dashboard and the Panda pool from Bamboo Solutions and Content Code. So if you guys can please stand up. So he is there, and we go. So guys, thank you very much. Awesome work. Those guys reached the second and the third place on the hackathon that we did, and we had a dinner yesterday, basically, where we announced all these guys.
Yeah, and they built these in about 2 months, probably with a lot of late night coding. But you know, it shows a little bit of what's possible in just a short amount of time. And we hope that you know, as you build your parts out there, we've actually got some great SharePoint showcase mechanisms, and we'd love to see what you can all build in maybe a couple weeks, a couple months.
Yeah,
and we can showcase.
And let's be honest, right? They started build these kind of functionalities at the very early version of the framework, so there was no documentation. There was a lot of engagement from our engineering side, but it was an alpha version, so stability board what it was. So, I mean, great job, guys, with such kind of a short timing. Then, very quickly, in terms of development experience, Chuck's mentioned that a little bit before in the previous session, but developing a web part now is kind of simple, and it's not tied to specific technologies and functionalities. I'm on a Windows machine, I'm on Visual Studio Code. I could use a Mac, I could use the Linux, I could do any other editing. At the very end is JavaScript. And just like Chuck was saying before, basically, by running gulp server, which basically gives me the ability to do a compilation of the JavaScript that I have and open a node instance on my machine that will open a TCP socket and will be able to serve the information from my machine, I'm able to testing everything over here. So I can go here, I can open the toolbox, I'm on the SharePoint workbench, which is, as we were saying before, a functionality that we use in order to allow developers testing their solutions on locally without needing to connect or even deploy anything on SharePoint. So I can add this kind of web part that actually Mike wrote. And here I can use a lot of data, and basically I can click these two options, and then I can find some kind of information. At the moment that I find something, here I can have a preview of the document. So very nice. I don't think it took months and months of development to create this web part.
No. It is, if you watched Chuck's session earlier, you realize that there's a sort of a mock version and a list-based version. I'm thinking a little bit of a shortcut. This is the mock-based version.
But exactly.
This version will be just as cool.
And the great thing about this is that if you take a look at the framework, the way that we provide this kind of functionalities to you is basically part of the infrastructure, right? So for example, this is a web part that has been created in React. You have a rendered method over here. If you take a look at this method, which is basically the method that Mike used in order to populate the dropdown, and you take a look at the definition, you can see that at one point here, there is a place for us that understands where you are. So if your environment type is local, you can go and use some kind of mock data that you can find by yourself. This is not local. Basically, what you can do, you can go there and click directly to the get library items, and you go over here, you will take a look that basically you can make a REST API to the SharePoint site. So basically you can build your logic no matter if you are doing something just like local development or remote development, and the framework gives you the ability to do this kind of information by yourself without having to invent some kind of special ways to create local data or to tell to your web part or to your application if you are local or basically connected to SharePoint. And this is among other functionalities, just like responsive by design, as part of the framework out of the box. So if you go back to the presentation, thank you.
Trying to be useful.
Oh, you are. So SharePoint framework, you guys saw about this slide a couple of times already. But there are some kind of important points here that we want to stress more and more, because we believe there are key factors and key components of part of the framework. It's modern client-side development. It's based on JavaScript. It's very light. It doesn't require you to be connected and to have C# or C++ functionalities or knowledge, which is kind of convenient in a world where more and more people know JavaScript when they get out from the school, so you can go and start developing on top of SharePoint, just like a modern web platform, without having a lot of specific knowledge about the platform itself, which is, in this case, is SharePoint. It's lightweight and mobile. It basically works for the browser, but not only the browser on the desktop, but the browser in the mobile devices, just like phones or iPad. The workbench itself gives you the ability to have a view that resembles or simulates the mobile experience, so that you can quickly check your functionalities without having to deploy this kind of information. And most importantly, this is part of the framework. So as I was saying before, at the same way that the framework tells you if you are going to be local or remote, the framework gives you functionalities in the property pane, in the property bag, that you can query in order to understand the form factor that your web part is using, so you can automatically make some kind of rendering decision based on the kind of device that has been used to render your web part or set of web parts in the page. It powers our own experience. We stress it, and we will keep stressing during the week, that we did this kind of framework for us and for you. It's not just like other frameworks that we did that we only created for third party. This is a framework that we use for building our own experience. Modern pages, the team site, the news experience, and moving forward, all the other experience are built on top of the SharePoint framework, which also gives you the one kind of a line of thinking or thinks about the SharePoint framework can go beyond and above WebPatch, which the answer is yes, and we'll talk about that in a second. But what we are saying is that what you are using is what we are using. Not only the framework itself in terms of JavaScript, but also the development tooling and the chain and the packaging and the deployment and all these things. There are a lot of similarities between what we do as part of first-party functionalities that we create on top of the framework and what you can do as part of the functionality that we provide through the framework and the tooling. And then, of course, it's backward compatible. We saw that a second ago. The web parts that you create functions and work completely out of the box with no other changes on both classic pages and modern pages. And finally, it's open source and supports all the JavaScript and WebPart framework that we have. Of course, and JavaScript web frameworks that we have and we will have in the future. Of course, as we said before, we had to pick and choose one simply because we wanted to be sure that we were able to have a standard framework and a standard modus operandi across all the 400 and plus developers that we have in SharePoint team, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to pick the same one. And as a matter of fact, in the tool that we provide, the Yeoman template that Chax was showing a second ago, you can see that we not only provide support for NoScript, but no JavaScript framework, but also for React and Knockout. So in terms of the components that we have over here, we have basically the user experience, packaging, build and processing, and tooling. So client-side web parts, we talk about that. Those are the way that you use to extend an existing page or multiple pages or sites in SharePoint. The client-side web parts can live on a page because of the modern page canvas. And the modern page canvas is yet another component that we create by using the framework. As a matter of fact, we use React in order to create the canvas. The fact that the canvas was created in React doesn't mean that all the web parts that you use needs to be written in React. As a matter of fact, we created a kind of an abstraction layer to ensure that web parts that are created in no code or even no framework can coexist together with other web parts, like our out-of-the-box web part that has been created by using React, on the same page and on the same canvas. The user experience is also provide JavaScript resource management, which basically gives you the ability to provide context and to provide just the way that you want to manage your resources, just like JavaScript and files, as part of the framework itself. And of course, the context is a big part of this, right? So for example, as you have seen even before, and as Mike was mentioning a second ago, every time you create a web part and every time you consume a web part or even interact with a web part, there is very little postback on the server, right? You do kind of a standard single page application approach for JavaScript. But we do a little bit of work, especially in the very beginning of the loading of the application, or the page in this case, in order to provide you context, in order to provide you the page context, the user context, and also the Office 365 context. So that, for example, you are able to understand some kind of functionalities, just like where you are, the number of pages that are part of your page library, or the URL of your site, without having to do some kind of a postbacks. And that's because we provide all this kind of information in what is called the HTTP client context that is part of the SharePoint framework. In terms of the packaging, we have a client-side solution, just like Chuck was showing in the previous session. We're using Yeoman Generator for creating SharePoint templates or client-side web parts templates that you can use for building client-side web parts. And those kind of solutions are basically third parties. And those kind of solutions are basically extensible. And the way it means is that, as we were saying before, when you create a Yeoman template or when you are able to create a client-side web part by using Yeoman, it asks you today if you're using no JavaScript framework or if you want to use React or Knockout. We are also working in order to enable Angular V2 support out of the box natively. And because it's built on an open platform, we want to hear from you guys if you want different kind of templates over there. Sure, you can start with no framework and then add your templating, but if you want something that the Yeoman Generator should support out of the box, use user voice, send us your feedback, and we are working in order to provide more and more functionalities and support for JavaScript templating out of the box. And we also have the tenant scope deployment. This is something that we mentioned a little bit in the past sessions, but I want to spend a couple of minutes over here. Basically, the way it works is when the package is being created, the package needs to be provided to the tenant administrator, and the tenant administrator will publish this package in the app catalog, which exists at the tenant level. You have one per tenancy. And after that, the functionalities of the package and the web parts that are part of the package can be used and are available across all the site collections in the tenancy. Why is that? Well, the answer is simple. We're talking about JavaScript here. It is very powerful. How many internet domains do we have for a single SharePoint tenancy? 3. We have the -my, we have the contoso.sharepoint.com, and we have the -admin. So which means that every site collection that I have from security boundary standpoint is under the same internet domain, which means that the kind of code that I'm running client-side is such kind of powerful and can be accessed across all the site collection, which is the reason why we want to provide governance on these kind of functionalities, and there is the reason why we needed the tenant admin to be able to approve. There's another plus on this approach, which is basically the fact that everything works from a single place. What it means by that is, just like we were saying in previous sessions, you deploy your package. The manifest exists in the app catalog, but the resources, the JavaScript, the file, can be in a single document library in the CDN whenever you want. What I'm saying is that no matter how many instances of that web part you create and you instantiate in different pages in the site collection, all of these instances will point to a single place, which means that the tenant admin can have a kind of a kill switch, and if there is some problems, it can immediately kill and remove the functionalities in order to provide governance and control. Same applies for updates, the web part with new files and new resources. So everything is controlled and governed. And of course, then we, in terms of build processing and tooling, we are working with Yeoman for creating the templates. We use Gulp as a compiler and generator, which also can be extended. There are a couple of articles on the internet already where our MVPs posted some kind of functionalities to extend Gulp serve and Gulp package and deployment so that you can inject your own logic when you create a package or when you basically start testing a web part, a client-side web part through the workbench. And we use the SharePoint workbench, as we said before, as the tool that is used for developing and testing a web part with or without connection to SharePoint. So those are the web parts for the SharePoint framework. And the web parts is our first step. Are we done? Absolutely not. We need to do, and we want to do a lot of new functionalities. We want to extend the scope of the framework above and beyond of web parts. One of the questions that we heard a lot over here is that document library experience, document library and list. How many of you wants to be able to extend the document library and list experience with the new experience just like you did before with basically custom action or JavaScript? Exactly. So right now, we don't do that. And we decided to do that in order to be able to provide a new experience first. But we recognized that this is something that we absolutely want to fill up as a gap, which is the reason why we want to extend the functionalities of the SharePoint framework to provide you a similar capability so that at one point you can imagine a world where you have a package. And in this package, you don't have only client-side web part, but you have some kind of a part of code that are describing something just like a custom action or a custom view, and you deploy this code part as part of your similar deployment process that you do for the client-side web part. The tenant admin approves this kind of functionalities, and then you have this customization available on the site collections and the list and libraries that you want. So this is one of the things that we are working very, very hard, and we are aiming to do basically this kind of functionalities in the next calendar year, 2017. The other thing that we want to work very, very hard is extend the scope of the client-side frame or the SharePoint framework on full-page application. So today you can create a web part, but what if I want to have my own application just like the homepage or just like a custom view on top of a list? We are working in order to enable this kind of functionalities in the SharePoint framework so that in the future, when you create a new project by using the Yeoman template, you can have a functionality that says, do you want a web part or do you want an application? And if you want an application, basically you can deploy the application in a similar way, and then you can apply an application to an existing list or library or something new, so that now when you access that kind of container, the entire application brings to life and not so just like that single web part. So those are the areas that we want to be able to focus very, very much between the end of this calendar year and the next calendar year. Other sessions that we have weekly around the SharePoint framework, this is kind of a recap. Thank you, Mike, for doing that. We had the introduction to the SharePoint framework and build client-side web parts early today. And then on Thursday, we have learn about PNP and the new SharePoint framework. We are working very, very hard with the PNP in order to be sure that not only we have the latest documentation how-to capabilities available for everybody, but we also have tons of code samples and functionalities that can be used to build client-side web parts today and in the future, apps and other functionalities that will be part of the SharePoint framework. Let's talk about add-ins. How many of you have add-ins today? Quite a bit. And it's important because add-ins have a great functionalities that provides, that offers to you in order to be able to extend SharePoint on-prem and online pages and libraries, similar to what we did on the client side, on the server side, full trust code web parts, and the client side web parts today with the SharePoint framework. So, in add-ins, just like a recap, I know you guys know that better than I do, but basically you can have two different provider model. You can have a SharePoint provider model where basically you use a sub-site in your site collection to host data of your add-ins, or you have a provider hosted model where basically you have your entire solution, data, business logic, and UX living outside of SharePoint. And what the add-ins gives you the ability to have this very well and protected and isolated experience inside our SharePoint page so that you can basically interact a little bit, but not too much because you are in an iframe, but provide a new kind of extensibility functionalities as part of the SharePoint page itself or the theme side page. And of course, you can have web parts, you can have full page application, custom actions, and event receivers. And one of the things that we hear from you very, very much is that, yeah, add-ins are great. We have a lot of, we have some kind of interaction limitation due to the iframe, which is what we aimed and we think we solved through the client-side web part. But most importantly, one of the things that you want to do with add-ins is the ability to run high-trusted code on your site or site collection or tenancy. And right now, the only way to do that is either by site loading or by basically being able to give to the tenant admin your add-in by itself, because these kind of functionalities are not available through the store. And we heard about that, and Joe, although I don't have a timeline for that, but I can tell you that we are working very, very hard to be able to enable a scenario where if you have a high trusted add-in, we will be able to use the store in order to target the tenant admins to such kind of high-trusted admin add-in so that the tenant admin can go to the store and install high-trusted add-in on their tenancy. So this is a kind of a work that we are doing in terms of the kind of a feedback that we got from you. Again, no kind of commitment in timeline right now, unfortunately, but I can tell you that we are working very, very hard on that. So when we have done that, there will be no more needs of site loading for high-trusted add-ins.
Yeah,
at least the goal that we have.
It seems cool though, you know, like kind of like hacking in.
It is.
Loading it? No.
But I mean, how many of you guys would like to have such kind of capability? Cool. So we are listening and we are working for that. One other thing that I think you would like to see is what the add-in play on modern pages. Because add-in are great. Add-in work on classic. What if I have a modern page? You guys talk about client-side web part. They are so cool, but sometimes I need the same kind of functionality and capability that the add-ins provide on modern page for a couple of reasons, right? First and foremost, because I made a lot of investments on my add-ins, and I want this kind of investment to continue to work in the future of SharePoint, which is the modern experience. And the other reason is because sometimes I need the level of protection and boundaries that an iframe provides to me, because either I want to protect my IP or because I want to do some kind of, I want to ensure that the change that the page has, that the hosting page has, doesn't interact with my add-in itself. So we are working on that, and just like to show you something, if I go back to my machine, and if I put my pin, wait, it works. So a couple of things here. So this is the, so let me call this, yes. So this is the modern page. This is the classic page where I was before. I can save this. And I can go back to my modern page, and I can publish it. So here now I have my modern page where I have two different client-side web parts, one from Bamboo Solution, the other from Content Code. Then what I can do here, I can try and install some kind of add-ins on my site collection, right? So if I go to site content and I take a look at my functionalities over here, I can see that I have these two add-ins, Component Notification and Black Compass, that are basically already being installed. And those are add-ins. If I click on one of those, I can see this is a SharePoint hosted add-in. It goes to a SharePoint site in order to host the kind of information that are part of my add-in. In this specific scenario, I can basically create a pool. I can create some kind of items. I can say that this is entry from Ignite session. I wish I know how to spell. It's an information. Let's see. If that works on a modern page, spoiler alert. I get order two. I say start date today, end date tomorrow. And right now I'm in the add-in world, right? Nothing has been changed. I created a new entry in a SharePoint hosted site that is using this kind of site. Then I go back to my page, and I basically put my page in edit mode. And let's do a little bit of things. Let's enter some text first and say, let's add an add-in here. Then I click plus, and I take a look at the toolbox. And if you take a look at the toolbox, you can see all the client-side web part, but there are also some kind of new functionalities, just like the company notification. And this is an add-in. So if I click over here, and if I cross my finger, here we go. So now you have, in your page, you can have your add-in that is living together with a client-side web part in a modern page. And again, this is an add-in that I downloaded from the SharePoint store. The add-in developer didn't have to do anything in order to show up in a client-side, in a modern page that uses the SharePoint framework. But basically, because now the SharePoint framework is able to understand also add-ins and client-side web parts, you are able to use your add-ins, which is the one that you invested before, in a modern page to the SharePoint framework. Is that cool? Do you guys like it? Come on. Thank you very much. So another thing that you want to that I want to show here is that I have another add-in here, which is the Blackcomb Visualizer. And this kind of add-in has an interesting thing here, which is basically you have the ability to add this kind of add-in as well. But one of the things that this add-in does is that when you install the add-in, it also injects some kind of functionalities in order to extend the toolbox. And here you can see something interesting. You can see that there is this visualizer icon on a modern experience. So how is that possible? And this is possible because if you have declarative custom actions as part of your add-in, declarative custom actions work out of the box on modern lists and libraries. The imperative one, which use code, is the one that we are working on. And this is one of the milestones that we want to provide very, very soon. But if you have something declarative, that works already. And you can have a proof over here. And similar than before, I can go here. And I can go to my page, and I can put my page in edit mode. I can click my toolbox. I can look at the Blackcomb Visualizer, and I can publish because I'm in edit mode when I'm not in publish it, but when I publish the page, here it is. Here's that I have the ability to show my add-ins together with client-side web part on a modern page. The same works on classic pages. I have now client-side web parts and add-in on classic page, and I have client-side web parts and add-in on modern page. And I think the message that we want to provide here is that no matter which kind of investments you want to have, and of course if you need to continue to invest on add-ins because of the scenario that add-ins target, you can continue to do that, and as well as if you want to invest on client-side web part, you can do the same as well. But both kind of artifacts, add-in and client-side web parts, work perfectly on both classic and modern experiences. So full support around the spectrum, around classic and modern experiences. So again, what do we have to choose? Do I have to abandon add-ins? Absolutely not. Add-ins provides key functionalities and are continue to be supported on modern experiences, just like on classic experiences. So if you want to provide code isolation or IP protection, if you want to provide a consent-based permission that you don't have in client-side web part because the consent in the client-side web part happen at tenant admin level, if you want to have a full control of the user experience because you don't want to interact with the page, but you want to have your own experience in your provider, for example, as part of a provider-hosted application and add-ins, then you can use add-ins because they work on both classic and modern. On the other hand, if an iframe is a problem for you, if you want to be fully part of the page experience, if you want to be able to interact with other functionalities on the web part in the SharePoint context, client-side web parts is where you want to invest. So basically, we are extending the kind of capabilities and opportunities that you can have on top of SharePoint with both having add-ins and client-side web part working on classic and modern pages. And with that, now Mike is going to talk about more kind of other functionalities and investments that we are doing and across and beyond, above and beyond the SharePoint framework itself.
Yeah. So
So data and APIs, obviously, you know, we're probably all here because there's a lot of great stuff inside of SharePoint, and you can get at that stuff through those data and APIs. Now, in addition to server-side object models, where you're using .NET code to get at webs and libraries and lists, you know, when you want to code remotely against SharePoint, you're typically going to want to use either CSOM or REST. In a sense, they actually come from the same source. They're based on some of our server-side object models, so there's a lot of similarities between the two. And so a lot of the difference between whether you should use CSOM or REST comes down to a personal choice. If you're coding in JavaScript or .NET, maybe some of the client-side object model libraries might be more useful. If you're coding from a remote service, you can use the REST APIs to go call into SharePoint. And for all of the major functionalities we tend to add in SharePoint, we tend to have a lot of, certainly server-side APIs, but also REST and CSOM that goes along with them. So those are sort of some major API surfaces of SharePoint. But as I mentioned, we're also investing in the Microsoft Graph. And so the Microsoft Graph is this company-wide effort to expose, all the kinds of entities, especially that you'd see in Office 365, but other products as well, in a consistent, straightforward, streamlined way. And as of this conference, we're actually announcing the beta preview of sites and lists inside of the graph, and you can actually go develop against that. You can also get to the files inside of your SharePoint site through a OneDrive kind of file-based API. So in the same way that maybe you would have, SP folder and SP list before, you have, Drive and lists APIs exposed through Graph. Some of the benefits of Graph APIs are that it is really just one API for developers, including Hybrid. It's hard for me to understate the problem of if you want to build a mobile application, for example, and you want to have a really great experience, you don't want to, when that app starts to say, hey, user, where's your SharePoint site? Please type in HTTP, your entire SharePoint URL. What you really want to do is discover what SharePoint sites that user has available to them. And by providing one consistent endpoint on graph.microsoft.com, you can discover for a particular user the set of sites that are available to them. Again, a big key facet is consistency. So when you develop against these APIs, you're using a lot of the same libraries and frameworks to actually get at the content. Of course, it's really well integrated with authentication, so we have a number of different libraries for actually making the process of having your app authenticate go quick. And a really key thing is if you're building mobile apps or services, we have a number of SDKs. We have iOS and Android SDKs, but also SDKs for Ruby and different types of service frameworks so that you can code against the Graph APIs no matter where you are and what your scenario is. And when we build a new SDK, for example, for Ruby or something along those lines, it benefits all of the different Graph consumers that are available to it. So we think that there's a lot of critical mass that we're building towards that. So as I mentioned, we actually now have sites and lists that are available. So the developer preview should be available imminently, and Luke actually will have a session that talks about that, And what it provides for is the basic discovery of sites and site collections, as well as create, read, update, and delete CRUD actions against lists and list items. And you can also access the files and folders with the Drive API. So without further ado, let me show you a little bit of what this looks like. Now, this is actually in Node 6. Now, this is actually probably, this is actually a really terrible demo. It's very basic, it's very bad, but I'll show it to you.
So you're setting up expectations here.
Yes.
Good.
Yes. No, but don't think I'm going to come up with something great. Okay, so what I have here is just a very simple project. Now, what I did was, because I was maybe procrastinating a bit too much in creating my demos, I wanted to create a Graph API, and so I was doing it this morning. And what I really wanted to do was, start coding with a graph. And the great thing about it is that there's a lot of samples already out there. So there's some examples out there for Exchange that were already present that I could just go download and use, and they had all the libraries, and they worked really well. And because we now support SharePoint sites and lists and graph, I can just take that same sample, just change the endpoint, and voila, my sample just works with SharePoint. So I'm going to go just hit, just go debug this application. This is a Xamarin Forms application that's going to, essentially launch an Android application inside of my emulator. And it's going to do a very hello world thing. But again, the point is that a few things. First, we have these Android SDKs, we have Xamarin SDKs, we have iOS SDKs that make it all straightforward. And let's see, it's going to go sign in, hopefully, and go pull down the information about me that's the user that's contextually signed in. Let me go hit sign in. Oh, there we go. Okay, just a little slow. And what it did is it took the JSON response from the site's API that's now newly exposed, and it returned some of the basic data about the site. But I could actually go drill in, I could go grab the lists, I could grab all the specific items in those lists, and I could really get started coding. And so, again, the beauty of this demo is that I could just start with an existing alternate graph sample and just get started coding. I can put it into Xamarin, I can start working with SharePoint data, and all of the authentication goodness that comes with graph is available there for me. So we really think that the simplicity of this, once you maybe get started with SharePoint, you'll actually be able to more easily incorporate all the different signals and data that we have exposed via graph, because you'll become very familiar with it, and we'll get that big benefit of Unity.
And if you want to know more, 10:15, me and Ryan have a session on Thursday.
Yep. And we also have another session about the OneDrive and Graph API. So again, think of OneDrive as essentially, the user experience of OneDrive is kind of your file browser on the web, and the OneDrive API is kind of your programmatic file browser that you can see through the graph, and you can use that to visit both OneDrive data that's in OneDrive Consumer as well as SharePoint data. Now let's talk a little bit about workflow and processes. So we have a number of different technologies here for actually doing processes on top of SharePoint, because of course this is very valuable and important. One of them is now we have this new set of capabilities that we're sort of growing around Microsoft Flow. And so if you haven't had the chance to see it in action and get an experience of it, it's definitely something that you'll want to catch some sessions around. And it starts with letting users basically bind very simple actions and very simple processes to items inside of their lists and libraries. And so you can actually start to build processes on top of those. There's a more advanced version of Flow known as Azure Logic Apps, which allows you, is more designed towards developers to get started working with and building various types of solutions. And so there's a lot of similarities between Flow and Logic Apps, but Logic Apps is more targeted towards the higher scale, developer-created types of workflows. Now, of course, in SharePoint, we also have the concept of workflow engines. So there's the 2010 workflow engine, which is built on .NET, and the 2013 workflow engine, which was more service-oriented and built on top of App Fabric. And those were continuing to be supported and we're working towards part of the platform. Now, sometimes you need something a little bit more lower level. You don't really want to build a whole process, you just want to get notified when things happen inside of SharePoint. And so we have a couple of technologies around those that, in turn, actually workflow tends to be built on top of. One is the concept of event receivers. So when something happens, let me know about it. And if you build an add-in, you can bundle in these remote event receivers with your add-in to get notified of when changes happen inside of your site. But recently, we also introduced the concept of webhooks. So webhooks are actually a much more simplified way to just say, hey, SharePoint, I'm interested in this type of change inside of your libraries or lists. And when items change, you'll essentially get an HTTP web callout that will notify you that something inside of that library has changed. And so you don't have to go build a whole application. You don't have to go figure out all the details of packaging a remote event receiver and its registration. You just make a few REST API calls to register your webhook. You have to do a little simple validation process to confirm that your web service is okay with accepting webhook requests, and away you go. So webhooks, now in preview that you can get started with. And let me go show you a little bit of what that looks like. Ooh, wrong way. Cool. Okay, so in Microsoft Azure, we have, of course, app services and lots of different tools and technologies for expressing code. But one that's really interesting and really nice is this concept of Azure Functions. So when you have an Azure app service, it's great and it's really easy to code against, and I love working with them, but you always have this service running in the background, whether you're using it or not, just sort of sitting there waiting for requests. And it's also maybe not necessarily as scalable if you have a very dedicated set of instances. So in my case, what I actually want to do is I want to have a notification of things that will happen when things change inside of my document library. So for example, here I have my document library of important medical research documents. And when I rename a checklist to the required checklist, I want to make sure that people know about it. So what will happen is this will actually kick off a webhook to that Azure function that I was just showing you. So behind the scenes, there will be a timer that will pick up that change, and it'll go into my webhook. And so if I go back to Azure, we'll talk a little bit about the code. And theoretically, when the action actually happens, you'll see a little notification down there.
So what we're doing here is, the first thing is we have our Azure function, and when the incoming webhook happens for the first time, it sends along a validation token so that you don't just, you know, DDoS other web services by saying, oh, sign up for webhooks every time a document changes against, you know, Microsoft.com. You know, there's a validation process that has to happen, and the first time around, it has to return an identifier that matches. So the first time in, we're going to look for a validation token, and we're essentially going to return that validation token back to SharePoint so that it knows that, hey, we're interested in receiving these webhooks. Now, further down in the function, we're going to actually start dealing with this change request. And the way that webhooks work is that it's not going to pack in all the various bits and pieces of data. It's just going to say, something happened in this library over here. And as a developer, what you'll want to do is go back to the SharePoint library and say, hey, SharePoint, what's changed recently? So that makes it a little bit more complicated, but the benefit is that you'll have more robust logic notifying when things happen, because you're always just sort of, you know, running the same algorithm that looks for changes and will sort of be responsive to changes as they happen. Sometimes it can be a little slow, so let me just go try this one more time. Let's go back over here. Rename it again. Okay, so what this function will actually do is it'll take that change, and then it'll go find the list of people, it'll go call out to the Graph APIs for the set of contacts, it'll go retrieve them, and then it'll go send those users an email. So down here, I actually sort of go and structure my email, and I'm using SMTP client here, and it will go send out an SMTP mail. So that's essentially what the code will do. Now, let me show you what that mail looks like. So I was running this earlier, of course, as documents happened, and you can see how things are going on. So you'll see that the user is now getting this notification. And of course, this is a very simplified demo. You'd want to do lots of buffering and make sure that you don't, you know, spam people and be very careful about how you send mails. But that's the general idea of you know, webhooks hooked up to Azure functions that you can access. And it's a really lightweight and streamlined way to to start dealing with changes as they happen inside of SharePoint. And coupled with Azure functions, it's actually a really, they're a really great pair. Now, the other thing I just want to show you as a kind of a bonus demo is that this is actually demonstrating our new actionable actions inside of Outlook. So if you want to code in these sort of custom actions, and you want to, for example, say, okay, start a video call, you can actually have people submit in line, I'd like to schedule a video, schedule a chat to talk about this. And the Outlook will actually do a post back to a server that you define so that you can actually implement more workflows and more capabilities right in line inside of Outlook. And this is something that Microsoft Flow takes advantage of to really streamline the process of getting people to respond to actions. So let's see. Oh, wow, it didn't fire. Well, we'll try that later, see if it actually fires. But again, it does run on a timer, so sometimes it can take a few minutes for it to go through. But you saw the idea of the function. Okay. So that's a little bit about webhooks, and we think they're sort of a very interesting building block for building processes. You can see how you can just, they can be a big gateway to injecting C# code as to what happens when remote code that happens when documents update inside of SharePoint. So we're going to have more sessions on Power Apps and Flow. So if you're interested in seeing more of the capabilities at that higher level tool known as Flow, check out Chris's session on Thursday at 2:15, and you'll find out more there.
So one last thing that we want to say right now and introduce, just like announced today, is that basically we are also working to introduce CDN capabilities in SharePoint. So this is actually something cool that we are working very, very recently, and we are providing in preview right now. There is a blog post that has been released at the end of last week about these kind of things. The functionality here is pretty simple. Assume that you are creating custom functionalities and custom portal, both in classic and in modern, by using classic pages or modern pages. And assume that you have a lot of artifacts. Today, what you normally do, you either put your artifacts in your own CDN, or you put these artifacts in a document library, namely asset library or whatever you want, inside of SharePoint. The former has kind of improvements and benefits for performances and control, but has a cost behind that. The latter has less cost because it's a document library in SharePoint, but you have performance problem. So basically what we did is that we integrated the capability inside of SharePoint so that now the tenant admin can enable a functionalities of public CDN capability on a folder or on a document library through the PowerShell tenant admin. The functionality is already available in preview. And once you have done that, basically we have a functionality that hooks that kind of folder or document library as part of the CDN origin for our in CDN that we use in Office 365. You put the resources over there. You are then able to either hard code today to either hard code the URL of the CDN in the resources in your custom page or to call a client-side function that will return this kind of information. Tomorrow, we are putting that as part of the SharePoint framework or as part of the publishing template on classic pages so that you can basically put the standard URL of the web of the library on the folder, and behind the scenes, we do a URL redirect server side to point to the CDN. Then you basically point to the resource, the CDN grab the resource, put the resource as part of the CDN deployment, and voila, when you are basically consuming the resource is coming from the CDN and not from the library. So this is available right now. You can start using that both in classic and in modern pages. With that said, let's talk about the roadmap.
Yeah, so this really just summarizes a lot of the things that we've talked about. We've actually broken down, you know, a lot of the new improvements into these four buckets. And we talked about some of the various things that we're working on and we're thinking towards. So we're working towards making webhooks and SharePoint framework generally available so they can start using them in your, you know, production team sites and production sites that you have in Office 365. We're also working for the SharePoint framework to work to bring it on-premises in 2017 so that you can use it in on-premises development as well. As Luca mentioned, we're improving the support for add-ins for different types of deployment scenarios and making sure that they can be factored into modern pages. We want to make sure that you can use SharePoint framework to extend all the various places that you would extend before, so custom views and custom toolbars, those kinds of actions. Webhooks right now, they support, you know, lists and list items, but we've certainly gotten a lot of feedback that people would want to use webhooks for things like site creation or for when a field gets added to a list or have more of an ability to filter the kinds of actions that they'll get on their server so as to control, you know, how intense that might be. And the other thing is we want to make sure that the adoption experiences of your customizations becomes easier over time. We got to start with a store where you can go and acquire applications and just install them into your site without necessarily having to involve your you know, corporation's entire hierarchy. And we want to make sure that that's even more streamlined for things like, for example, SharePoint framework and other components moving forward. So we want to make that much more of a smooth adoption experience. So that's a little bit of what's on our top of mind as we think of SharePoint. One note, see, it did actually fire. It just took a while, sorry. Anyway.
But the demo worked, so good job.
Yeah. And so with that, I think we wanted to sort of end it and see if anybody had any questions that we could take. We have got about 8 minutes, so we're happy to take questions. Of course, we'll also be off stage afterwards, yep. And we're also going down to the SharePoint framework booth.
Correct.
In the pavilion after the session. So.
But thank you very much, and if you want to help, questions, open mic.
Questions?
If you have questions, you can guys go to the mic, please, so that we can.
No, sir. Yeah. What's the difference between a webhook and logic apps? You know, like, so you can.
So webhooks, you can think of them as really just a very basic building block that when something in SharePoint happens, it's going to go turn around and call out to a web service. And that web service can be anything you implement using whatever kind of service. The beauty is that webhooks are so consistent and deployed across a lot of other services, it should feel very consistent. So it's a very elemental building block. Logic apps is essentially a lot of the components that you see in Microsoft Flow, but with more programming support and more you know, sort of scalability for high volume situations. So it's a whole infrastructure that works not only with SharePoint, but a lot of other types of applications. So it, you know, you should definitely go to the Flow sessions and find out more about logic apps. No. So the question is does webhooks have a dependency on the Azure subscription? No, webhooks, I mean, again, you can really just, it's just an outbound web request that can go to anywhere. It can go to AWS, it can go to whatever, you know, hoster that you want.
Hi. Recently you said, you know, we can use the SharePoint library as a CDN. So is there a special kind of the privileges or permission is required in order to use the same set of the library or file across the site collection or multiple site collection? Like the CDN, you can use the same library or same files across the site collections.
So the CDN functionality that we are introducing right now is public. So the idea is that you are already using kind of assets that you, as from corporate IP standpoint, you don't have any kind of business impact. So basically something that you can go and is one site collection sorry, it can be one or more libraries or folders in within a tenancy.
No. The question is, the one I have one site collection.
Yeah.
I created one library. Whatever the resources is required, I will place on the same library, and then set of the information or script or files I can use on the multiple site collection.
Well, so
this is how CDNs works.
Well, so my my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is you would prop these files to essentially one site collection in your tenancy. All the site collections and all the web parts you would deploy would point to that.
Yes.
And behind the scenes, what we're doing as part of the content distribution network, we are actually farming those out to
The CDN. So basically, the way it works, you make the call. The CDN understands if that file is that resource is cached or not, and if it's not cached, it makes the request directly to the library and save the resource back to the CDN.
Yeah. So the downside is it doesn't have all the security permissions because again we had this assumption that they're
correct.
Just web resources. But the positive is that it's much faster and can take advantage of CDN distribution.
So you mean to say the CDN, whatever the CDN you're saying, that's the library or document library we can publish as a CDN and use across the enterprise without any security privileges?
Yeah, so when you choose to publish and make a document library a CDN and you publish resources to it, the idea is you're publishing things like JavaScript files, GIF images,
exactly, JPEGs,
PNGs, those kinds of things.
Static content, basically, you're using for your product customization.
Right, why I'm asking, because every site collection have a different governance plan.
Yeah.
Right.
You can publish, so there is no limitation of how many libraries or folder you can enable as a CDN origin.
Okay.
We'd be happy to talk a little.
Yeah,
more
we can talk about other or the boot offline later in 15 minutes if you want.
So the CDN is accessible from anywhere without any securities
yes.
yep.
leakage.
Yeah, that's the idea. It's an optional thing.
Okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
Question?
Do client-side web parts work with SharePoint 2013?
Will client-side web parts work with? So I think your question is that is SharePoint framework going to target SharePoint 2013 on-prem?
Yes.
Working on that, TBD, we are absolutely committed to target the latest version. For other versions, we are working on that. We don't know yet.
Thanks.
Good question.
So you talked a little bit about the future stuff coming with the framework, like full page apps and stuff. Are you planning on hitting like page layouts or master pages or other things like that?
So let me flip the question a little bit. I think what you're asking is that as part of the future of the SharePoint framework, what is the kind of plan that you have for custom pages in the same way for the same scenarios that you have today for page layout and master pages in publishing?
Kind of more like web page or
application. Publishing pages, kind of.
Yeah.
So the answer is we are working on that. We have no kind of still decision and commitment on that, but just like Dan was saying at the beginning, we are working very, very close with all of you guys, MVP and ISVs, so that we want to be sure that we are targeting the right kind of scenarios when we are working, when we are enable such kind of capabilities and functionalities as part of the evolution of SharePoint framework. So yes, on the roadmap, not really sure yet how to do that, but we'll do that.
Do you plan to extend the REST API for SharePoint? Because, for example, in client-side object model, we can do some things that are not available in REST API, and now in client-side web parts, we can't use client-side object model.
Yeah. So the short answer is yes. And if you think about the integration with the graph infrastructure, there is an opportunity for us to either build new REST endpoints that can unlock scenarios that are not available today or reinforce some of the scenarios that exist in CSOM and not in REST. But this is something that we are working very, very hard. Absolutely, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Questions around external lists using BCS?
BCS?
Yeah.
Okay.
So on SharePoint Online, you're allowed to create...
OData V4 only, anonymous. That's the kind of thing you can do on online.
So, yeah, so the question was Graph API and Lofio workflow and process APIs, would they work against external lists as well, the same way as we use CSOM today for?
So
that is a great question. I think that's something we'll have to look at.
Yeah, so you can think that, so graph, the graph team, which is an effort across company, just like Mike was saying before, is doing a lot of thinking and work in order to build an hybrid experience so that you can have some kind of functionalities and capabilities that you have on-prem exposed through Graph. So you can imagine a world where there is an extension of such kind of functionalities and you have an endpoint on-prem and you are able to consume through hybrid in the cloud. That kind of functionality is not there yet. But it depends on the scenario you have, it may work or not. And then we have the last question, and because we have to leave, but me and Mike are going to be on the booth, so you can continue. We can continue later. But yes, please.
I'll try to be quick. I have two questions regarding the timelines of the future roadmap development, and I wonder if you would be able to answer those. Basically, regarding the SharePoint framework and the on-premises availability, will that be aligned with the feature pack 2, or will that come earlier than?
It will be aligned with feature packs. We don't know which and by when, but there is a commitment to use the feature pack channel as a deployment, a delivery tool for on-prem.
Okay. And another question regarding the webhooks. I know they have just been released into preview, but do you have any idea on whether the general availability will be weeks or months or how many, how long time away?
Yeah, I think we're basically just looking for feedback to gate how quickly we get it out, and then we sort of continue to build on it. But I would think that it's definitely something a little bit more in the short term.
This calendar year.
So Dan said an order of a couple months.
Okay. Yeah, order of a couple of months.
Okay.
Yep. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.